Welcome to Spiritually Naked, where physical and non-physical worlds collide, offering a refreshing concoction of optimism and realism. It's time to strip down the barriers of limiting beliefs, to master the art of manifestation and synchronized living. Everything you need to live an inspired, awakened life is within your grasp. Start creating the life you desire today with Spiritually Naked as your guide to simplifying complicated issues for real life change. Now here are your hosts, Steve and Stephanie Banks.
Hello everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Spiritually Naked. I am your host, Stephen Banks, and I'm here with my partner and co-host, Stephanie Banks, who in the second portion of our program will channel for us a collective consciousness named Solomon. But first, we have with us today as our guest, Diane Pomerantz, and she is the author of 9 books, most of which are nonfiction about animals. She is also a grief recovery specialist who helps people recover from grief over any kind of loss. In 1979, Diane had the remarkable experience of becoming a student of an amazing psychic, medium, and healer named Catherine Hayward. Through their time together, Diane realized that she was to write the biography of Catherine, and 36 years later, she has come to publish her book titled Catherine, A Woman of Vision. Today, we are very excited to speak with Diane about Catherine and her amazing journey. So welcome to the program, Diane. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Stephanie.
It's so fun to have you here. I'm really, really, really excited about this.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Well, we're all in this together, as I see it. So
that's right. It's like meeting
an
old friend.
We're here to share information, and that's such a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, it's amazing that how we came together, and that your path, what you've worked with, is so similar to what we're just getting into now, and meaning the channeling and the speaking.
And there are no mistakes.
Yeah, the synchronistic events that transpire to bring people together for a communal goal is always magical to witness and to acknowledge it as a synchronicity, which I always get so excited about.
Yes, especially in this day and age, I think it's more and more a common recurrence. And there's a reason for that, because of the turbulence, the times they are changing, as it were. And a dear colleague, actually someone that I greatly admire, Jean Houston, called us the parenthesis generation, parenthesis, and meaning that we are the buffers between the old institutions that are crumbling, whether they be financial, religious, educational, etc. They're no longer working. You can go to any part of the world and see that they're obsolete, they're running out of steam, it's time for change, and we are preceding and getting involved in the emergence of the new age, which is going to bring about great compassion, kindness among human beings, respect for one another, planet Earth, and all living creatures.
So in a sense, we're the mediators.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. And the teachers and the leaders, because mm-hmm. we understand the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the students. We're always students.
And we're always students. Always, always, always.
Well, one thing I find fascinating about your story and about Catherine, the book in particular, is how you met Catherine when you were 28 in 1979, I believe.
Yep.
And you wrote this manuscript after a certain amount of time of being a student under her and her channeling and her teachings, and it took 36 years later for it to come about. I was wondering if you could share with us that synchronicity that brought that back, and I'm wondering as well as if you think it's a timing of the consciousness of the collective or the timing of yourself that brought it into fruition now.
All of the above. When I met Catherine, I'd always been on a spiritual path. When I was 15, I read a book called Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And that was based on the Hindu philosophy and Siddhi Yoga. And I met a guru in Toronto, Canada, through a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, said, you must read this book. And I did. And it was life transforming. And from that point on, I was really consciously on a spiritual path, exploring Zen Buddhism, Hinduism, Catholicism, Judaism, the Kabbalah, and on. I couldn't get enough. I couldn't learn enough. And the thing that made most sense to me was the Hindu religion, because it talked about reincarnation and that we're not here for one time only. Does that make any sense logically at all? No, of course not. The inequities of life. How do you explain a child born with AIDS who lives for 3 or 4 days, if that, or a quadriplegic who has to live life in a wheelchair? And these are all learning and growth opportunities, not only for those individuals and those souls, but for the people that love them and the people that they're with. And so life on Earth, according to Catherine, is a school in which we evolve spiritually, and we're in a constant state of growing. And you can compare it, if you would, to a grade school, an elementary, junior high, and then high school, because you need to pass first grade to get to second, and so on. And so we are all learning different life lessons simultaneously in all parts of the world. We're all at different grade levels. It's like a one-room schoolhouse, you know, where you've got the kindergartner, the preschooler, and, you know, the high school graduate, the high school person ready to graduate. So that made a lot of sense to me, and I thought, yeah. And that explains how some people resort to violence. It's out of ignorance. They're preschoolers. They don't know any better. And also to the great saints, sages, and teachers of all time, whether it be Jesus, Muhammad, it goes on and on and on. More recently, Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa are great examples. So we've always been on that course, and ultimately our destiny will be as the destiny was of the great saints, sages, and teachers of all time.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. Not a differ in my thoughts and what Solomon and that whole group has to say. And it's so apparent, it's so evident in our own lives and in the lives of those around us. And, you know, as we go through these times, like you're talking about, I'm curious from your perspective, because you've been around longer than I have, for one, and have more experience.
In this lifetime.
Well,
this lifetime.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. In this lifetime right now, you've been immersed with somebody who's been channeling since the late 70s. I was born in the early 70s, and I just woke up to all of this about 3 or 4 years ago. How's that changed? How do you see how it's changed in the world and how people are accepting or not accepting of receiving guidance?
Well, think about Catherine's world. She was born in rural Wales in 1899. The witchcraft laws were in operation.
Right.
It was the Downton Abbey era. And Catherine, at the age of 7, had an out-of-the-body experience. She was pronounced dead by the family physician, and we all know medical technology was not at its highest level in the early 1900s, and especially in rural Wales. She lived in Gwaelodogarth, and the doctor pronounced her dead of double pneumonia and pleurisy. And she recalled going out of the body and looking upon her physical body and being with angelic beings that radiated love and purity and kindness. And these angels embraced her and welcomed her, and at the same time advised her to go back into the body, that she had much work to do on planet Earth, and that her mission was very important. And she would, day by day, month by month, year by year, discover her mission. But she heard her mother sob out, and she went back into the physical body. When she emerged from the experience, and she had not wanted to leave the angelic being. She loved where she was. It was peaceful. It was harmonious. It was beautiful. But anyway, when she awoke, she spoke at the age of 7 in a full, mature adult voice and knew the future. And from that point on, the life of her family, the life of the village, changed dramatically. And the witchcraft laws, as I said, were in operation. So her parents they were Christian. And they encouraged her not to speak of any of this publicly, but she almost couldn't control herself. And it just would pop out. Mm-hmm. And at dinner one night, a couple of years after this whole experience occurred, she was at dinner with the family, and her uncle had booked passage on the Titanic. And she said, oh, no, she just blurted it out. You mustn't go, Uncle. You must cancel your passage. And everybody looked at her as though she's not of right mind. And For some reason, her uncle listened. And, of course, we all know what happened to the Titanic. But she was always predicting. I mean, and it wasn't a conscious desire to predict. It just had a way of bubbling out because that's what she knew, you know.
So did it only come out when it was related to something that was presented to her? For example, her uncle with the Titanic, or did she, like, she would obviously have to think about it or be faced with it, right?
Right after her illness, there were people that knocked at her door, and she was desperately ill. In fact, she spent her entire childhood and adolescence very fragile, and she was not permitted to attend school. She tried, and it would make her terribly ill, and ultimately she learned that she was not to be conditioned or socialized by the norm, as it were, and that she was to be pure and receptive to the spirit, to the source of all life, and that had she listened to the teachings that were taught in the schools, she would not be as receptive. So she just knew. And shortly after the experience, the out-of-the-body experience, people knocked at the door, the front door of her home, and her home was three stories. And I actually had a chance to visit it in the UK when I was doing research. And she said, "Mother, those are the Williams." And she said, "They're bad people. They do terrible things to children. Don't let them in. Don't let them in." And that was just out of the blue, and her mother thought she was delirious. And she answered the door, and sure enough, it was the Williams. And about 3 to 4 weeks later, the Williams were convicted of child molestation and evicted from the village. So Catherine just knew. She had no intention. She had no provocation, no motivation other than that's what she knew.
Yeah, she was just experiencing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so fascinating. And it's a good thing that she did remain separate from the public, or else she may have been turned away from it.
Yeah, especially then. I think, like, it's, I feel fortunate now to be in a day and age where it's more accepting of it.
And the key word that you just said is more acceptable.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, I think the vast majority of people would not really buy into some of the things that we're talking about or understand or appreciate them.
No, it's true. Well, if you, they just wouldn't
They're
be able
young.
To relate to them, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like, and I don't know why it is, but it seems to me like most of the people that I bring it up to are open to it.
Well, you like attracts like.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I feel that
that's
those are the
works.
People being drawn to you in particular, for example.
That's right. Yeah. You're a magnet.
Maybe it's because they know I'm an Aries and they're like, "We better just agree."
I don't think so.
I go far
Although
beyond
that might
that.
Be a possibility.
And the people that find you are meant to find you.
That's right.
Just as the people that found Catherine were meant to find Catherine.
So how old was she when she passed away?
She was 87.
And did
it was
she...
in 1987, and she was 87.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
And so did she ever write a book?
No, she did not write a book, and she resisted a lot of famous authors who wanted to write her life story. Mm-hmm. And I'll just share a little bit of my experience with Catherine. I was in the entertainment industry in New York and worked at NBC Sports as a production secretary for my first job. And then moved on to become, and I got promoted in every job to an associate director on Captain Kangaroo, which was a children's show.
Yeah, I remember
and
that
our,
show.
I can't believe you're too young to remember.
No, I remember that too.
Yeah, we're in our 40s.
Do you really?
Yeah.
But anyway,
it was an hour show 5 days a week, and I was there at 7 in the morning and left at midnight.
What year was that about, or what time, like approximately?
Oh, 82? I guess that would have been 75, 76.
Okay,
oh, wow.
Just before my mom. My mom lived in New York City and went to school there and dated Bill Cosby and was roommates with Joan Rivers' sister. And I was wondering if it was around the same time frame, but you were...
I bet it was. I bet it was. And I also worked for PBS, the PBS affiliate WNET, and lived right near the United Nations. Yeah. And I had been born in New York, so my family was originally from New York, and I loved living there. But for the entertainment industry, it was really imperative that I come to the West Coast because that's where every other kind of show besides news and sports and soap operas were being developed and made into television programming and films and stuff. So when I moved, I ran into an old friend from college, my friend Michelle, from the University of Michigan. And Michelle, it turned out, lived about 2.5 miles away from my apartment in West Hollywood. And we revitalized our relationship. And Michelle told me about Catherine and that this extraordinary woman had been her spiritual teacher, that she was psychic, that she had traveled all around the world teaching that there is no death. You couldn't die if you wanted to, and offered proof of life, proof of survival. And anyway, she said, you must meet Catherine. And Catherine had free public meetings at her home on Sundays at 11 o'clock in the morning. And so I attended with Michelle. And Catherine was very charming and charismatic, had red hair at the age of 79, wore a caftan, but very tastefully, you know, bejeweled. I mean, she wore this jewelry that was very tasteful. And I just remember there were about 35 people there, and there was standing room only. This was her little bungalow in West Hollywood, and it was very British, you know, with fresh flowers and the vases everywhere. And Catherine came out at about a minute to 11 and took her seat and welcomed everybody, and then started speaking in this incredible British accent, contralto voice, and you were just hooked immediately, just by that alone. I mean, she was very theatrical and very charming and feisty and witty and funny. And she started speaking, and it was obviously that she was under the influence of another entity, being, etc., her spirit guide. And she started speaking, saying, there is no death. You couldn't die if you wanted to. The real human being is immortal. The physical body is a garment that when it's worn out like an old overcoat, you get rid of it and move on to another level of life. But it's constantly growing, constantly evolving. And as I said, she talked about reincarnation. And it was as though I sat opposite her, and it was as though I had a mental checklist, and I just put a check by everything she said. Like, I already knew that, but I didn't really know how I knew that. But I said, yeah, that's right. That's right. I know that. That's true. And I couldn't wait to meet her after the meeting. And we had a break after her talk, which was completely inspirational, by the way. And after her talk, she did a relaxation exercise, which relaxed the mind and the body. And then she did readings, and she went from person to person in the room. And I kept saying, no, don't read me. I'm very private. I don't want a reading. But she read my friend Michelle. And she was uncannily accurate. And I mean, it was as though she were repeating a conversation I'd had with Michelle the day before. It was so factual, and it was so unbelievable to me. But she was dead on accurate. And for the other people that she gave readings to around the room, each had a different question or perspective. She brought home that there's so much more to you than the mere mind or the physical body. You, the real you, is the power that motivates the mind and the body. And when you've achieved mastery over the emotions and the physical body and the mind, you will have achieved what Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, all the great saints and sages of all time, what they have achieved, and you will be in the place of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. So I was just intrigued by her, and I started studying with her. And at one point she had said to me, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months after I started studying with her, and I mean, I had notebook in hand, yellow pad, taking copious notes like a college student.
That really sounds really like Steve.
I use a recording device.
He follows me around.
Yes. Well, I brought my notepad, and we did all kinds of, I mean, she introduced me to a lot of different types of paranormal activity that she had experienced through the years, etc. We did past life regressions together, and I just couldn't get enough. It was like I was addicted to the information that she had, and I wanted it desperately. And about 3 or 4 months after I had met her, she had said, my dear, you're every bit as psychic as I am. And I don't use it the way, but my birthday was a couple of months later, and I knew what was in every present that I was given. Mm. It wrapped different kinds of boxes, and I said, oh, that's a this. Oh, that one's that. Oh, I love that. You know, and no one knew how I was able to do that. And I didn't know. I mean, I had no intention of doing it. I just blurted it out like she had blurted out the truth. Mm. And I learned that my gifts were not to be used as hers were. Mine were to be used intuitively. I'm also a grief counselor. I don't know that we talked about that. But I continued Catherine's tradition in a sense that I only just recently realized in editing the book, that she taught that there is no death in comforted people. Well, I've been a grief counselor, and using her knowledge and her gifts and my knowledge and my education to teach people not to fear death and to know that in love, in true love, there is no separation, and so on. So that's a little bit of a synopsis. And then about 2 months after that, I awoke on a Sunday morning before her meeting and knew that I was going to be writing her life story. And Catherine was going away for a weekend in Northern California with her son from England. And she said, and I said, Catherine, I believe I'm going to be writing your life story. She said, let me think on it, and I'll see you Tuesday, and I'll let you know. And sure enough, on Tuesday, me with my notebook in hand, Catherine gave me a very warm hug. And she said, my dear, you're right. You're going to be writing my life story. You are no longer my student, but you are my colleague and coworker. And that was just a huge honor to me. I can't even tell you how touched I was by that. Mm-hmm. And that began a relationship that's simply indescribable. I adored her, and we were inseparable.
I adore her, too.
Me, too.
And I haven't even met her.
You would have. She was so warm but real. She was authentic. She never built herself up. There was no ego. She lied she had lied in her youth. She'd done things that she wasn't proud of, etc. She had issues with an alcoholic husband. She'd done many things. No regrets, and just told the truth. And I think that's what made her so real, that she wasn't on a pedestal ever. Mm-hmm. But people would be drawn to her. I mean, anywhere we went, we did a lot of our sessions. I have 200 audio cassette interviews of her, by the way. And we would meet at the beach. I would drive her to the beach because she wasn't driving. And we'd sit in Malibu on the beach front and talk. And it was extraordinary. That whole mingling that you and I, Stephanie, were talking about a little bit, you know, the nature and being in nature and the purity of that and the beauty of that also helped in terms of inspiration.
Well, I think that's imperative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Personally.
It is. It's so essential to take time to be in nature. It really calms the senses if you allow it to, if you get into a line with it.
Well, you're immersed in purity.
Yes, and beauty. And, you know, in this day and age, we're so connected to our toys and our tablets and our electronics that, oh, my God, to hug a tree and to see the birds and to watch them in action and watch the squirrels play and whatever it is, they're extraordinary. And I have, I rescue dogs. So I have 8 rescue dogs and have rescued over 46 over the last several decades, 3 or 4 decades, and work with the SPCA of Texas. I created the Pet Grief Counseling Program, which actually provided counseling, free counseling, and it still does. It's in its 16th year, to people who have lost a beloved companion animal and are ashamed or embarrassed to talk about it to other people, because other people go, you're crazy, it's only a dog, only a cat. And so we're setting the public straight little by little. You know, all of this is permeating the consciousness of humankind. Mm-hmm. And now with Harambe and the Cincinnati Zoo, et cetera, our consciousness is being elevated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you can feel it. You can feel it every day.
Yeah.
You can feel it increase every day. The one thing that I've noticed personally in the last month, maybe 2 months at most, is the synchronicities. Like, they were always kind of, since I had my own near-death experience, it became more and more apparent, synchronicities. And as I began to really start to employ the messages that I've been learning through our spirit guides and have those teachings become more of a way of life now, I'm noticing that the synchronicities are almost daily. And
yes, they are.
It just makes life so much easier. Like even today, there was this lady and I woke up in the middle of the night thinking about her. I forgot about her as a client, landscaping, because I have a landscape business. And I woke up thinking about this woman and I couldn't believe that I didn't have her information. And I realized that I was going to have to drive to her house and apologize for not being there a month ago and tell her I lost her name and number and everything. Like, that's kind of embarrassing. And then I checked my messages this morning and there's a message from this lady saying, "It's perfect timing. You can come whenever you want." Da, 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 da. Like, thank you, universe.
And you know, that's the way it works if you allow it to work.
Allow is the key word. Allow and surrender.
It is.
Yeah, it's a constant lesson for me.
You don't even have to ask.
No.
You don't even have to ask.
Well, we do. We ask on a higher level, right? Like, we're just in tune. We don't need to ask literally with our minds, but our...
It's like you, Diane, talking about how you just knew it was in the boxes. You're just spitting out what you're hearing. That's all I do when I channel Solomon. I'm just spitting it out. Right,
and it's so funny because it came from absolutely nowhere. I had given no conscious thought whatsoever to what was in those packages.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And I just blurted it out what they were. And, whoa, what is that? How'd you do that?
Well, what's amazing, and for every single one of us, because we're all of the same source, is actually if you set the intention in practice, you get better and better and better at it. I used to practice with a deck of cards. I'd start with color, then I'd start with suit, and then I'd start with suit and color and number. And you do get better.
Or you could just skip that practicing part and just not do that part. I like to always take the shortest route.
It just depends.
Yeah.
It just depends on your particular growth process.
Mm-hmm.
And each of us is different, but ultimately the goal is the same.
It's
so
true.
That we're here to become enlightened.
It's so true. It's so true. Well, we're out of time, guys, for our radio interview, but Diane, if you could please let our listeners know where they can find Catherine, a woman of vision, and find you and your services.
Yes, please visit my website, which is drdianepomerance.com. And that's DRDIANE, P as in Peter, OMERANCE.com. That's my website, and it's got so much information about Catherine and the other 8 books that I've written. And many of them are about animals and spirituality, how we were all interconnected and interdependent. And they can certainly get it from Amazon.com, Kindle, Barnes & Noble. It's pretty much everywhere. They can order it off of my website if they'd like, but they can find information definitely about me just Googling me and Catherine, and Catherine Hayward was her last name, Hayward.
Excellent. Well, thank you for this portion of the program, and everyone stay tuned, and we'll be back with Diane and Solomon.
It is our pleasure to be here with you in this time, in this space of your reality that you are currently calling home. It is a pleasure for us to be here in conversation with you.
It is a pleasure and privilege to be in conversation with you.
You have been a contribution to your society in more ways than you currently understand, although you do recognize to a certain degree the extent of your contributions, yet we are here to remind you and encourage you that your contributions are being recognized in such a way that change is transpiring through your interactions with those around you. We encourage you at this time to take this as an opportunity to discuss with us any topics that you would like to broach. Any ideas that you would like to share? Any questions that you may have?
How do you view the changes that are currently taking place on the planet?
We view them the same way that you do. We view them as a step in the right direction. We view it in a sense that the momentum is moving in the direction of a more inspired way of living, of a more creative way of being a human being.
moving towards the idea of unification on the planet that will then unify yourself not only with the other human beings on your planet, but all beings in various forms, shapes, sizes, from various places other than your own. As you become more used to one another on a human level, you'll become then more open and receptive to meeting other aspects of creation. This is where life will become very fun for all of you. More expansive, less fear, more openness to all of the potentials that you have access to in every moment, through every breath.
And how do we utilize our abilities now to further develop them so that our expansion is almost limitless, and that we are God, we are the divine source, and the divine source is in all creatures, all living things. Is that a correct assumption on my part?
Yes, of course. Yes. For many of you, beginning in the, let's say, earlier stages of remembering these ideas, of coming to terms and grasping the grandness of who you really are, for many of you, this will be and can be fairly daunting to view yourself in that kind of light. Therefore, what we recommend, what we suggest doing, these are merely suggestions. They may work for some of you, they may not work for others, and that is fine. We're not here to judge. We're just merely here to give you recommendations. And one of them would be to start with small baby steps. Practice the human ideas of understanding your emotions, understanding how your emotions influence your thoughts and actions, understanding how your thoughts influence your emotions. There's no order to operation in any of these ideas. Mm-hmm. Recognizing where emotions are stemming from. Recognizing how your emotions determine the outcome of a situation, how your thoughts determine the outcome of a situation. Practicing the lessons that we discuss many times. Being patient with those around you, being patient with yourself, loving others, allowing energy to flow freely. There's no need to block energy. There's no need to cleanse energy per se anymore. Really allowing the flow of energy to continually move through you, around you, with you. Allowing that which doesn't resonate to continue to flow, and that which does to stick around for a while and perhaps build on that energetic vibration that you feel strongly already. Removing the idea of judgment from yourselves and others. Understanding and recognizing that everyone is here on their own mission, let's say, collectively, yes, but with their own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And this is fine. There's no right or wrong to these experiences. All of you have been in each other's shoes at times, many times over and over and over. None of you are really that exempt from doing things that have been hurtful. Perhaps even, as you would say, downright wrong and immoral. Life is continual. You come back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Many of you are getting sick and tired of this back and forth action, but continue to practice and there will be not much more back and forth.
Oh, good.
And the reason why is different than you may think. There will be no need to go back and forth. Life on Earth will mimic that of life in the non-physical realm. This is what you are working towards.
Yes, I agree.
I love that idea.
The difference between the two will become such that it is unrecognizable as it becomes one.
With our species, with the human species?
Yes. There's no reason why you cannot come from the same, let's say, energetic vibration while on Earth. There's no reason why, as a human being, you are exempt from that vibration continuously Do you understand?
But wouldn't every single person on the planet have to be resonating at that vibration in order for it to be that?
Yes, of course. So this is not going to happen tonight.
No? Okay.
We're simply looking down the road a little bit based on what we're experiencing and seeing now in the vibrational, energetic waves of the planet. But yes, this is an accomplishment, let's say. Many of you don't like that word. We don't have a problem with it.
Right. And just curious, for those of us that have committed to incarnating on the planet Earth in order to run that gauntlet, in a sense, run from dark to light, is that a commitment, a full commitment, or do some of us just come for a couple times and not no longer partake in the physical experience?
First of all of you can choose to change your course at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
You've not signed a contract saying I will reincarnate over and 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 over again, and I can't get out of this contract.
No. But is it a standard belief that, like, for those of us that have committed to it, is that how we think? Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to go from one end to the other?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you would not choose to do that. You make these choices from the existence of creation, from the existence of source.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make those decisions through the physical mind while on Earth.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
So from that state, there's no reason to do something that seems unappealing. Does this make sense?
It does.
And?
I was just joking around with myself thinking that, you know, from the non-physical realm, do we remember what it's like to be an experience in physicality through the very narrow field of our mind, the way we experience it now?
In a sense, yet not to the same description of the memory that you are talking about right now, from a linear perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Is it being absorbed into our beingness, our energy?
That would be the most accurate way.
We've had on Earth.
That would be the most accurate way to describe this concept in linear terms for you to understand. Yes.
Yes.
This is why there is the idea of your memories being stored in the DNA of the human being.
And the Akashic records.
Yes.
Like the parallel memories, you mean, parallel lives memories.
Yes.
Yes.
Which really aren't memories per se.
It's just energy.
It's a vibration.
And all life is vibration operating at different rates of vibration. All life is energy, I'm sorry, operating at different rates of vibration.
Yes.
And so past, present, and future are coexisting simultaneously.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. However, we do not like to spend a lot of time on this particular subject. It takes many away from the idea of being a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the greatest teachings are available to many of you now in this time, in this space, where you are at right now in your, let's say, spiritual evolution.
Mm-hmm.
That concept is there, exists, yes, but we encourage you to focus more on the idea of understanding your life as a human being, the way you perceive it, with a past and with a future.
Mm-hmm.
It will allow for greater absorption of the entirety of these conversations. It will, let's say, create less confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we speak in your language. We refer to experiences as past experience or potential future experiences.
Yes. And so what lies ahead for us? Humanity as a whole on planet Earth.
That appears to be somewhat of an open-ended question, more in the direct, let's say, near future.
Yes, say in the next 100 years or so.
There will be shifts and changes that at this point in time your linear minds would not be able to foresee these kinds of changes. There are some, however, that you are more in tune with at this particular time, such as the reunification of human beings on a soul level.
Yes.
Through compassion, through compassionate actions, through compassionate responses, through open cooperation, through the ability to recognize each other in oneself. These are
and
concepts.
Is this one of the reasons, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just thought, is this one of the reasons there is so much violence and chaos in the world currently, that we are actually drawing closer together to a greater awareness and greater compassion?
As a species, you begin to move more out of the idea of fear and into the idea of love, breaking things down into simplicity here. There will be an uproar. There will be some upheaval. There will be the fear-based emotions in some, in many, that will become more apparent, more prominent. As the light increases, so too does the darkness at times, and this may be one of those times. But it is needed to propel the momentum to that of a more positive direction, let's say. That contrast will be what elevates the planet as a whole. It will be what pushes the buttons of compassion for many of you.
Yes, 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 yes.
It will be the instigator of change. If things were okay and just kind of sort of bad, not too many people would do too much about that.
They wouldn't pay attention.
Yes.
So it sounds to me, and I'm just, you know, intuitively speaking here, like...
There is no such thing as just intuitively speaking.
Okay, so my intuition was telling me that the one, as you were explaining and expressing, I could feel compassion and the love within myself towards others. And what I do feel that would potentially be a fast track to that for general population would be some sort of disaster on a large scale where we drop everything and just help.
This is often what happens.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was kind of feeling.
It takes tragedy to bring you together. This is something that seems to be part of the process for now.
Mm-hmm. But not war tragedy, because we see that that doesn't happen. But natural disasters, for example. Something where there isn't a finger to point.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Dark times. We would encourage you to remove judgment from those dark times. In other words, regardless of the experience and where it originated from, be it Mother Nature, be it an ego-based politician, be it you name it, a dark time is simply a dark time. Trying to fit it into a box confines you to certain ideas. Allowing the dark time to be there as a teacher, as a gift, as a present to unfold, regardless of the darkness, will be the greatest teacher available to you.
Mm-hmm. And we can actually experience that in our daily lives with every experience that we have.
Should you choose to.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not to say that you will all the time. We understand that it is not an easy task at hand.
And we love building boxes. They're so much fun.
Yes, this is.
I'm really good at it.
Humans do like their boxes.
Yes, we do.
Maybe just begin by opening them up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Letting some light in, shedding the light on what is inside your box. And then perhaps taking peeks over the edge, seeing what's beyond. Eventually getting to the top of the box and teetering on the edge of it. Should you jump and slide down the fold and end up on a nice green patch? Or should you jump inside your box again? That's up to you. It doesn't matter.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. It's up to you. All these choices.
So as you see it, what is the work of humanity, and especially people that have a certain amount of knowledge of spirit and our spiritual purpose, what are your suggestions as to what we should, what actions do we take at this point in time that can further benefit Mother Earth and her creatures and her people?
Love yourself. Love yourself. Remind yourself of your divine aspect of creation.
Right.
Tap into that feeling, tap into that knowingness, tap into that energetic vibration that is connected directly to source energy. And through that connection to oneself, through that love towards oneself, this is what you will then begin to emanate to those around you. This will then begin to how you begin to be how you feel about everyone around you, regardless of whether or not they're nice to you on that particular day or not.
Right.
Once you develop that, once this becomes part of who you are, the rest will begin to fall into place. Mm-hmm. The puzzle will start to come together.
So it's about love and acceptance.
It's about
reducing it considerably in dimension, but essentially, that's what it is.
Essentially, yes. Start with this idea and be open to all, let's say, ideas and concepts that come into your field of vision, that come into your world. Be open to what you're hearing and feeling and experiencing without placing judgment on it.
Right.
This does not necessarily mean that you need to adopt all ideas that come your way, that you need to jump on everything that you're hearing and seeing and experiencing, but being open to the flow of what's going on around you. And from an intuitive sense, picking up on that which is exciting to you, that you want to act upon that, and then see what else comes your way, and act upon that, and then see what else comes your way. You're basically jumping from one inspired idea to the next, one inspired feeling to the next.
And that's why it's said to be open to everything and attached to nothing.
Yes. But with this, you need to have you don't need to do anything. We would suggest having a certain amount of trust in yourself and in those around you and in the bigger picture, in the divineness of the non-physical realm, in working in combination with your physical world, having trust that what you really want is what you're really going to get. But doubting that is what creates a lot of your problems. Doubting that is what shuts the box back up. Nothing can get in if your box is closed. Hence, being open. Make sense?
Sure does.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you feel like you do this?
Do I feel like I do that?
Sure.
Do I do this? Well, I know that I want to do that. Does that answer your question?
Regardless of where all of you are at in your own personal journey, in your exploration of life, in your exploration of being a spiritual being, the direction in which you move, the speed at which you move or don't move, will be determined by many different factors. We would encourage you to be accepting of all those factors. Creating a resistance around them will simply slow down the process that you're trying to speed up. We don't say you, meaning you in particular. We mean you as in generally all of you. We feel that for those listening, this is an important topic to broach right now at this particular moment. Creating obstacles for oneself based on typically fear-based emotions fearful, doubtful, resentful. These are feelings, these are emotions that will slow down your process of moving in the direction that you would like to move in. The idea behind trust, as we mentioned earlier, trust in your higher self, that which sees the bigger picture, that which is there to support you, the true you, the deep you, the real you, not the superficial you, not the one who wants the blue shoes, the one who doesn't care if they have shoes, that you. By trusting in that you, by trusting in that you in everyone, you will then naturally gravitate back to that authenticity of who you really are. Mm-hmm. And from that place, a lot of the other ideas simply don't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. Life becomes really quite simple, quite magical. This is not to say that those things that you enjoy in your physical world become less meaningful. This is not what we're saying. Everything that you create as a species is there for your enjoyment. But what matters is who are you, but what matters is who are you running over in order to get those material things that bring you joy? What we are proposing is that you don't need to run over others to get to those things, to gain abundance. There's enough for everyone. There's enough for all to go around. There's no need to compete for it. The idea of competition is beginning to shift and change as a whole. Do you not feel this?
Within myself, definitely.
These conversations could literally go on and on and on, and we love them and enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. We are almost out of time, Solomon. One thing I wanted to ask specifically today is about Catherine. Is she very present with us right now?
Yes.
Yes. And does she have a message that she would like to share with Diane and the world now that her biography is being brought to the world?
Continue to share, my dear. Continue to share. Much love. Much love.
And much love to you. And to you, Solomon.
Thank you, Solomon.
It is our pleasure. We come to you with love. We come to you with gratitude. We come to you with appreciation. We look forward to our next exchange.
Me too.
We do too, Solomon. And bless the work that you are doing to benefit humankind and our planet. Thank you.
That was delightful. How was that for you, Steph? You were.
Are we done?
Yes.
You're right. I could listen to you forever. So soothing.
I know. Me too.
That's what I thought when you were talking earlier. So it's mutual. That was good.
Was lovely. It's beautiful, and you have so much to give. God bless you both. You are just amazing. Mm-hmm. And what I love about Solomon is the truthfulness and simplicity and lack of grandeur or pretense or affectation or anything like that. It's just so authentic.
It really is. And I think that's what I'm drawn to most as well. And it has never changed. It has always been that way from the very first message that
yes,
we received.
I love that. It's not lofty. It's not, you know, grandeur and all this other stuff. It's the truth.
Well, they actually pull us back down when we start getting into those ideas. They're like, listen, you're in a physical experience.
Well, you know,
let's experience
there's
it.
There's a lot to be said for that.
It's true.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate everyone who listens to this show. I appreciate the people that are on the show. I appreciate the fact that I have a career that allows me to simply come down the stairs from my office, as you know, as a landscape company as well, and hop into our mobile recording studio with Steve and have it all set up and be sitting in an office.
I love it. you have so many stories to share. It's amazing.
Well, I think,
you've only just begun.
We are just beginning. Yes, we're still tied to the old ideas and we're breaking free.
Not so much. You guys are awfully open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
receptive.
I think the whole, the whole purpose of this show and what we do is to bring back that wholeness of, like Solomon says, of who we are. You know, there's so much more to life than getting up and working your asses off for, next to nothing or maybe lots or whatever. It doesn't really matter. If you haven't found that depth within, there always feels like there's something missing and you keep looking for it in the wrong places. You have to, Solomon would never say you have to. Stephanie says you would have to. You need to come back to who you are. You need to remember the greatness of yourself and how impactful you are. And with that recognition, all of a sudden, at least for myself, I started becoming way more aware of how I'm being, how I am in the world, and how I'm thinking, and how I'm responding and reacting, and just being way more open to my own, quote unquote, let's say flaws or moments of, where I feel like I could have acted differently, but being okay with that because I'm just a human being. Really, I mean, I know I'm much more than that, but in that moment when I'm throwing my 13-year-old son down, or not throwing my son, his backpack.
Like, I wasn't there for that.
Throwing his backpack in the heat of the moment, like just literally picking up in the air and throwing it, and then afterwards thinking that is not what I am trying to share with people. But then having...
But that's temptation. That's human. That's humanist. I mean, that's the way... Oh, it takes a lot, and we're here to achieve mastery over those emotions. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't experienced them, you don't even know what you're overcoming.
Yeah, it is important.
And how much you're overcoming. You have to, set the parameters and see, okay, next time I'm not going to react that way.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so important, like you say, to experience those things, which is why we've had so many parallel lives in order
to
experience.
And that's why we're human in the first place, I believe.
Yeah.
We come to dense physical matter. We're beings of energy. We're spiritual beings. But we're here on Earth to experience the density of the physical life and physical pain and mental pain and emotional pain,
And we're doing all that so that we can let it go and then transform into the...
But relate to other people. It's a compassion level. You have to understand all these preschoolers and kindergartners. They're not there and they're not going to get it until they've had experience and learned.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
and to recognize them, each other in our own, in our own uniqueness, recognizing each other as our teachers, our greatest teachers. They're right in front of us all the time.
Especially
all the time.
If they're challenging us.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Because that's where the mastery comes in, right? It's like, here's an example. Here's an opportunity. What are you going to do with it?
So we all need to love our exes just a little bit more.
yes, we do.
No. Well, we're out of time, guys. This has been an absolute blast. And Diane, it's been an amazing pleasure having you here and learning more about...
Oh, it's been an amazing pleasure for me to meet both of you at last. And I'm so grateful for the time with Solomon. And, you have, so many gifts to share with so many people all over the planet.
Well, thanks so much for saying so, Diane. I really appreciate that. And thank you to all our listeners out there for being here with us today. Tune in 2 weeks from today as we will have with us a very interesting guest named David Lowe as we continue on our journey of expansion. For those of you who would like to learn more about Stephanie and Solomon, please go to our website at stephanie-banks.com. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel at solomonlive.com. Thanks again, everyone, and have an amazing week.